this is page two.
Yeah, this is page two. Just like the guy on television, can't remember him. Page two, Mr. and Mrs. America or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, what about the relationship between Marshall and Kennedy now when you have a launch?
Yeah.
Is there feedback directly from Cape Kennedy or Houston through telemetry systems to your comp lab here? Are you running checks against Houston and Kennedy, or what happens during launch operation?
There are microwave connections between the Cape and Houston, and between the Cape and here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are tied in directly. We get our data then from the Cape, from telemetry system from the Cape, here to Marshall. We can display most of this then here. And we also are tied into Houston,
mm-hmm.
but in a supporting role to Houston. As soon as the Saturn is above the horizon here, we can also receive some of the values, or most of the values, directly. Directly from the vehicle. Yeah.
Hmm.
Could be done. Yeah. So we call this our LEAF project here, Launch Information Exchange Facility, abbreviated LEAF.
I saw that sign downstairs, and I wondered if you had a large Scandinavian section hidden away in the corner of the building.
No. This is the Launch Information Exchange Facility.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a portion of this business is called the Huntsville Operations Support Center, where we support our operations group here in Marshall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing consists of, some computers which reduce the data in real time, or very close to real time, so that we can follow the trajectory and follow the orbit and the whole works.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a TV connection to the Cape, and can then see the vehicle itself, or portions of the vehicle, or drawings, or Dr. D was running around with a cup of coffee, or whatever. Yeah. And Mr. Eisler behind him with another one.
What about the pre-launch operations? Are you connected with those in one way or another with the Cape, or are you running checks here too?
Yeah. We are involved in the countdown demonstration test. This is done, followed up by using the same facility here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are involved before the thing gets launched, in making it ready in the launch itself. And after the launch, we then get our data, which we have to evaluate and give back to the developers.
Did the automatic checkout procedures come out of Marshall here, or did the contractors have a great deal to do with that?
This came originally out of Marshall here, and we were involved to a certain extent, and Astronics Laboratory mostly was involved in this business.
In the first, I have forgotten the date, but wasn't the first completely automated checkout performed on a battleship S-4B at Sacramento with Douglas?
Well, the battleship version.
Battleship
version. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Did you send people out there to help Douglas set that up, or how the hell was that accomplished?
Oh, I don't remember what we did. Maybe somebody was there.
Yeah.
But this was usually done by Astronics Laboratory. We helped Astronics Laboratory to do this. So they might have asked us to send some people along, which we probably did, but I can't exactly tell you anymore how this was.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Holtz, I was under the impression from talking to some of the Douglas people that they had worked out an automatic checkout scheme, and then Marshall came out in order to help them with this facility and insisted on throwing several levers and switches into the program so they could have some human control over it if they were going through automatic checkouts. So it was not really a fully automatic checkout. And so Marshall kind of got in the way, at least initially, of some automatic checkout procedure.
Yeah, well, in this whole automatic checkout area, I think I cannot help you too much
mm-hmm.
because we were not carrying the ball. The ball was carried by Astronics mm-hmm. Laboratory. And why they did this or that, I really can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
We had some people from the computer side to help in software things, but how to do it, what the philosophy was. That was not our.
Can you tell us how you how IBM came up with, or how Marshall and IBM came up with the program for the actual flight for the launch vehicle computer? Did you have anything to do with that?
No, this was also handled by Asterix. They used our computers here, and our programs, and so on. But where to carry the ball, really, the responsibility was Asterix. See, in the computation laboratory, things sometimes go this way. We make sure that computers, computer systems, in other words, the hardware and the software for this computer, to make this computer run, are available and can be used by other people, and that we have programmers to program their problems. So for instance, we set up a system how to compute trajectories. But what trajectories they compute, we don't care. This is somebody else's responsibility. And so Asterionics made use of what we have to offer here. But what the decisions were, I very often didn't know. And didn't have to know, really.
Were you involved with the breadboard materials too?
Yeah, some of our people were involved later on in the later phase. Dr. Talbot was involved from the software side. But again, only as in a supporting role.
As you look back over this program, the Saturn program, and the role of the computation lab.
We will do it entirely different next time.
Okay.
I think,
But that's always Monday morning quarterbacking, I suppose, you're looking
it's
back 20 over your shoulder.
2020 hindsight.
Yeah. Can you say what you would have done differently? Or what seems to you now to be a wrong turn someplace?
Well, since we know now that the Apollo project got curtailed earlier than we thought it would be. If we would have known at the beginning that the United States are not really carrying the Apollo project through the way it was planned, lots of things could have been done different. We would have used, could have done this with fewer test stands, and well, with less effort. For instance, in Michoud, this whole build-up of Michoud was not necessary, and so on. And unfortunately, we don't go in a straight way in this country. We go a little bit in a zigzag way very often. And this was done here also. So if you ask me now, knowing what has happened, I could have told you what I would have done differently. But not knowing what happens later on, I probably would have done it the same way.
Okay. What about the computation lab in general that's within the program? Are there certain points of it that stand out in your memory, certain things you remember more than others?
In the computation laboratory, in Marshall? How this differs from other comp labs?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
Well, it does. Usually, computation laboratories are a data processing service. Like filling stations, you get for 10 cents digits, or something like this. Now, this computation laboratory is a little bit different. We have found, or we have tried to avoid one thing which was very detrimental to lots of industries and other government agencies, namely that computer user groups sprang up in all kinds of courses of the organization. For instance, the comptroller usually was the guy who used the computers for commercial purposes, for payroll, for purchasing, for personnel purposes, for accounting, and so on. Okay, the scientific people, engineers, used them for, well, solving mathematical problems or engineering problems, and naturally their computers were first different computers, and they were in another place, and they were in a different organization. And there was, there is another use of computers, namely to use computers for simulation. This again was in another department, or was developed in another department. And sometimes even data reduction was someplace else. So very often you had in industry and in government organizations computers all over the place, sometimes half full. Sometimes if you want to borrow a key puncher, you had to go all the way up to the president of the company and then down the ladder on the other side to be able to get that key puncher. And all this we tried to avoid in the computation laboratory by making sure that we had all those things together. So we have in the computation laboratory now not only the data processing service, in other words, the processing of raw data. We also have a simulation department where computers are used to run a simulated experiment. This could be a scientific experiment, or it could be a mathematical model of the whole organization, how it functions, and how it would function better, and so on. So in other words, a use of computers for simulation. The data reduction is incorporated into this business so that we always have computers used to their fullest extent. Sometimes, let me put it this way. Our latest step we took here in computation was to switch over to what we call generation 3 type computers. Maybe I should explain this a little bit. Generation 1 was very primitive computers like the card program calculator from IBM or so, early computers. Those computers could only digest one job at a time. You put your job in you used punch cards, you used outside memory, again punch cards as main memory and so on. Later on you had generation 2 type computers. Those computers used already transistors and they're very fast, like the IBM 70904. But still this computer could only handle one job at a time, and when the job was through you had to shut down the computer and you had to mount the tapes on the next computer and so on. And this naturally was not a very good utilization of a computer if the computer has to wait to get a tape mounted, or to write something on tape. Usually those computers could only either compute or write their outputs on the tape, or read their inputs from another tape, or something similar. Anyway, all this was avoided in generation 3 type computers. Those computers have multiprocessing, so they can process more than one job at a time. They can read while they compute, they can write while they compute. You have multi-programming, you can have more programs in the computer than in the former generation computers. And you have time sharing. You can use the computer from remote stations, and remote stations share the computer. And every remote station thinks it has the computer all by itself. The computer is very fast, and so on. Okay, anyway, those computers allow a much better utilization of the computing equipment than what we had before. But also, those computers are built so that scientific jobs, mathematical jobs, can be done the same way as, for instance, commercial jobs, like payroll, and like accounting, and so on. So the computer doesn't make any difference anymore between those different jobs. As a matter of fact, it balances its resources a little bit, well, not a little bit, quite a bit better. For instance, in commercial computers, in generation 2 type commercial computers, you have lots of input data, relatively few computations, lots of sorting of data, and lots of output. So you needed a tremendous array of input-output gear. You had a very small computer inside, and you had lots of output gear again. The scientific computer is different. They have only a few data going in, and you have lots of computations, which keep the computer busy for quite a while, and then after a while you have a little bit of output. So you need lots of computer and you need little input and output gear. Okay, now the generation 3 type computers are equipped so that they compensate each other. You have enough input-output gear for the commercial jobs, and you have enough computer for the scientific jobs. So it dovetails, so to speak. And the whole utilization of this type of computer is cheaper than if you would have separate computers for those two users. So this is much more economical. As a matter of fact, our third generation computer we have is about 60% of the price of what we had to pay for about the same amount before, amount of computation or the same utilization before, and it has about 60% more capabilities.
Hmm. When did that third generation come in?
Well, this happened a couple of years ago. I think about 4 years ago, I think we started to introduce
towards the end of the program, the Saturn program.
Yeah, okay, but I want to tell you how this computation laboratory differs from others. This was the original idea,
mm-hmm.
and what I explained here. Okay, now since we were organized the right way, this switch to third generation computers was easy here in the company and in Marshall. It was not so easy in other companies and other government agencies because they had now to consolidate their scientific and their commercial users and their simulations and their data reduction and so on. And sometimes this isn't easy. You know, if a guy is in charge of something, he has his own empire, and you all of a sudden tell him you're not the king anymore, then he gets mad. This happened in lots of installations, and this was not the case here. So it was relatively easy to switch over to something new. And this is the direction in which the computer development or the utilization of computers really goes. Lots of commercial companies like Boeing or like Republic Aviation or like McDonnell Douglas have consolidated their computational resources and their computers, computer systems, now even into a subsidiary of their company. So they don't have them in their own company directly anymore. It's now a subsidiary of the company, which serves the company, but also gives service to others if they want to. So the development goes in this direction, and so far we are at the right track here in Warsaw. Not only were we at the right track, but we were leaders, so to speak, in this area, and we hope that our management will see this clearly. Sometimes you have the impression they don't. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you could make some comments about
the management. No, I need my job.
Yeah, about the management. About the style of and utilization of computers by Marshall as compared to the other aerospace companies. If you thought that you were ahead of them, or at least abreast of them, or if they were less or more sophisticated maybe than you were in their application.
Yeah, well, we were quite, for quite a while, we were really ahead, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But lately, with the reduced money we get, we are falling more and more behind. So if this trend continues, I think we won't have any leading role anymore.
So at one time you were in a position to say that might be better to a contractor. You could say it might be better if you reorganized your computational work a little bit more along these lines. You
oh yeah,
more
we
out
did.
Of it and they could,
we did.
Yeah.
We sent some teams out to companies and
mm-hmm.
told them to consolidate this in order to do it cheaper and so on. So there was quite some influence. But I don't know how this will be in the future. Because we cannot afford. We will pretty soon we will leave lose our in-house capability completely if we continue in the computation laboratory. And then to send the support contractor to another contractor, you just can't do. It would throw them out.
A while ago you mentioned simulation and you mentioned management among those. Have you ever run any simulated management organizations that have resulted in any changes that you know of?
Well, we haven't done this here, but this was done, this should be done. People at MIT, Dr. Forrester, for instance, has done lots of things like this. He simulates portions of the American economy, and so on. And he's very successful in what he does. Matter of fact, this is quite interesting. You know, some people call the computer era the second industrial revolution because of automation and so on. Now this apparently seems then to be in contrast with the first industrial revolution we have. This should be the second one. Now what was the first industrial revolution? What happened there? The first industrial revolution was the mechanization which started, I think, in England way back. Well, it started there, but pretty soon it spread out of the world. And it has as a consequence that lots of people lost their jobs, that things were not done manually anymore, that the big factories line work was done, the machines took over, machine mechanization took over. And as a result, you had things like unemployment and the proletariat after all communism and so on. All a result of, or at least is very tightly connected with the first industrial revolution. Okay, now why did the first industrial revolution have those terrible consequences like unemployment and so on? It was because nobody knew what really was going on. Nobody could predict what consequences this mechanization would have. And so consequently, nobody could do anything about it. It just got out of hand. Now, the second industrial revolution, which we are experiencing today, namely the computer and automation revolution, it is not necessary for this to be an uncontrolled revolution. This can be very well an evolution, because nowadays, we can use the computer to simulate its own influence on the economy, for instance. So we can use the culprit itself, the computer, to predict its own influence, which is done, for instance, as I mentioned, by Peel and MIT, but not only there, but all over. And why should we have war games only? We might as well have peace games, too, in order to avoid wars. All those things can be done with computers. And for the first time with computers, and it can be done in a controlled way. And I don't think it's necessary to have something which goes out of hand again.
We can avoid it.
We can avoid it if we do it right, and if the country spends some resources for things like this, and this can be avoided.
Dr. Holzer, can you say perhaps a few words about Von Braun as a technical manager of the Saturn program?
Dr. Brown is a technical manager. Yeah, I can tell you some stories. I wanted to give him a snow job once, but it didn't work.
Just like that.
And I never tried it again. This was way back. I think the thing is this, Dr. von Braun can catch things faster than other people, even technical things. So let's put it this way: we have a new name for a certain number of things here, and this is systems engineering. We need all of a sudden systems engineers, which is not a bad idea because it pays out to think along the lines of a system instead of running blindly into components development and have lots of changes later on. Now, if you look at Dr. von Braun did in his life, I think he was one of the greatest systems engineers we have here. He was the systems engineer. Because all those different components came together in his mind. At least until we finally came to the Apollo project. There, things got a little bit complicated, I have to admit that. But I don't think he ever lost track of the most important things there.
There's part of that too, though, because he was willing or able to delegate authorities to the various lab chiefs, and so that when it came together at a meeting, the information that was given him from the laboratories was pretty hard and fast stuff, and he was really able to make good decisions on very realistic information.
Yeah, well, this is what we would call systems engineering, yeah. Namely to make trade-off studies and to make the right decision of what should be done. What should be put aside and what should be followed.
Mm-hmm. Well, we asked for an hour. We started early, and we've just about run our hour out.
Oh,
here.
We have still 10 minutes, so that's okay.
What about the? No, I shouldn't ask you this. You were going to tell us some dirty stories to begin with. What about? Do you remember any humorous things in the Saturn program? There must have been some. And,
oh yeah, there were lots of them. But it's hard all of a sudden to find out what this was. Yeah. Well, we had the Russian cosmonauts here for a visit. As a matter of fact, I have just got a picture here. Here they are. This is one of them. This is, what was his name? Nikolayev, and the other one was, what I forgot now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they were here for an official visit. And they were allowed to drive our simulator, our moon vehicle simulator.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, we let them take a simulated drive on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So the simulated drive on the moon, well, it was so realistic that they couldn't really differentiate between a real ride on the moon and the simulation. Yeah. And the moon not. Aldrin was with him. You see him here.
Mm-hmm.
Was Aldrin, yeah? And Aldrin had one of their Aldrin signs they had here from their space city. It is simulated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how this thing looked there, but anyway, this had the Soviet star was on, and Aldrin had was Aldrin. So Aldrin on this moon map, on this moon used for simulation, we had some small blocks in order to tell people where they were and what crater they were and so on, that drove around. And so Buzz Aldrin came and said, why don't you glue one of those things, here, have it, glue this on one of those rubber blocks, so if he drives around he sees king size. drove at Space City there.
Yeah.
We gave this to one of our technicians, and he did this. So while Nikolayev drove the simulated space vehicle, all of a sudden he saw something way in the distance, and he came closer then and looked what this was. And they said, well, looks like I'm in Russia again. He was quite surprised to see this.
Yeah.
So they had a good time. Laughed about things.
Funny.
Well, there were lots of other funny things, but it's hard right now to find.
Can you pick out one? It's hard to phrase the question. Some particular instance that the computational lab was really of immediate and significant value to a problem in the space program, where you just see there, you look back and you see a series of crises.
The Pogo affair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Pogo affair was something where we really made some kings.
Mm-hmm.
Is
there anything in the design of the Saturn generally that the computation lab was able to help out? Or again, here in that, I suppose you're just taking stuff
to
fed into.
We have our fingers really in everything.
Yeah.
So there's nothing where people could do without.